Homage to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Role models play an important part in all of our lives, whether we seek them out or not. And whether we walk the Buddhist path or not, they can have the power to shape the direction we take and the ability to influence the decisions that follow on from there. Life has its ebbs and flows, challenges and opportunities, and at every turn, we often seek wise counsel. Examples that we can follow or emulate, people that we can respect or look up to, and much, much more. On the Buddhist path, the Buddha is, for all intents and purposes, our most eminent role model, teacher, and the perfectly enlightened one. There are also many noble and great disciples of the Buddha, those who have ordained, as well as lay people who were commended and praised by the Buddha for different qualities and/or aspects of their practice. This is a recurring area of study on this channel, asking who are our role models and featuring some of the great disciples of the Buddha. The aim is to learn about these noble beings, delight in their lives and accomplishments, highlight the importance of recognizing them as worthy role models, and take them as inspiration towards developing the Noble Eightfold Path. Now, in our study of role models, we have covered both monastics and lay followers of the Buddha. And in today's Dhamma session, we're going to study another of the foremost bhikkhu disciples of the Buddha. So far, if we refer to our table summarizing the Buddha's foremost bhikkhu disciples set out in the third and fourth chapters on the foremost persons in the Anguttara Nikaya, we can see that we've briefly looked at Venerable Ananda, and we went through the sacred quality of Bodhisattva. And that's how we briefly looked at him, having heard much or learned much. And we know that Venerable Ananda is foremost amongst the monk disciples in this area, and for very good reason. He's also the foremost amongst monk disciples with a good memory, with a quick grasp of those who are resolute, and of course, amongst the personal attendants. And we also went through briefly Venerable Sauvitha Thera when we were looking at the heavenly realms of form, so Rupa Loka, and this was in our gradual teaching series. And we looked at how Venerable Sauvitha Thera recollected 500 eons in a single night as a deva who is non-percipient being, so Asanyasata. As a result, he was declared by the Buddha foremost amongst those monk disciples who recollect past lives. And then, in a little bit more detail, we also looked at Venerable Nanda Thera, and he was foremost amongst those who guard the doors to the sense faculties. So, these bhikkhus, amongst many others, have undoubtedly proven worthy role models with very noble qualities and accomplishments. And today, we're going to look at Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera. He is particularly inspiring for a number of reasons, all of which will become clearer once we deep dive into his story and accomplishments. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to look at Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera was because of the Vamika Sutta, and this is also known as the Simile of the Anthill, and this is in the Middle Length Discourses, discourse number 23. It is in this discourse, the Vamika Sutta, that a deva or Brahma recites a riddle to Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera and advises him to seek out the Buddha to learn its meaning. And there is an inside pathway that can be developed in order to realize Nibbana. Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera took instruction from the Buddha and he went to the forest, and this is how he attained final liberation. So we will be learning how to contemplate the Vamika Sutta in a separate session. Now, spending time learning about noble disciples of the Buddha can be very helpful to our spiritual path. We can learn from their interactions with the Buddha, and we can lean into their noble qualities, their good qualities, and we can acknowledge their worthiness in having attained to the noble path and find inspiration to walk in their footsteps. The more time we spend in their company, the more our minds get uplifted. There are a variety of references to Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera in the Pali Canon, and there's not a huge amount when you compare to other noble disciples. So, if you were to look at Venerable Ananda or Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Mahamoggallana, they have a lot more discourses and references. But given that we have some, we'll be able to look at each of them in turn. And we'll definitely have that separate study of the Vamika Sutta because that's undoubtedly a very powerful teaching and worth taking our time to learn. And also, if you're interested, I'm open to doing a separate study of this Payasi Sutta, where Venerable Kumara Kassapa actually had a very wonderful dialogue with Prince Payasi to help him to overcome the wrong view. And I found that sutta incredibly fascinating because it gives a very good example of why Venerable Kumara Kassapa was declared foremost amongst those with variegated speech. So we'll look at that a little bit further along, at least in brief, for this session. So let's begin with Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera's early life. It was about the time of the appearance of the Buddha that he was conceived to a young couple. And we learn from the Nigrodhamigha Jataka, so Jataka number 12, that this young woman had been always inclined towards the spiritual life, but her parents actually gave her in marriage to the son of another wealthy family. And despite being married, she understood certain dhammas, such as being able to recollect or contemplate the 32 body parts, and she saw them as repulsive rather than attractive. And her husband recognized that she wasn't into dressing up in finery and enjoying the festivities of their community, and he asked her about it. And it was during this discussion that she asked her husband's permission to allow her to ordain as vikuni, speaking about her inclination towards the spiritual life. And he kindly gave his consent, and so she went to the nunnery of bhikkhunis, who happened to be the disciples of Devadatta, and ordained there, thinking she was ordaining under the Buddha. Now, at that time, she was unaware that she had already conceived a child. And as we would expect, after a little time, the pregnancy became visible. So the bhikkhunis reported the matter to Devadatta and sought his advice. And Devadatta, not having the Buddha's psychic abilities, assumed that she had committed an offense and broken the Vinaya rules. As a result, he declared that she is no longer a bhikkhuni and expelled her from his community. So this young bhikkhuni found her way to the nunnery of bhikkhunis who were the disciples of the Buddha, and the bhikkhunis reported her case to the Buddha, who, through his supernormal powers, already knew that she had conceived prior to her ordination as a bhikkhuni. But he wisely authorized Venerable Upali Thera to investigate the matter and give a decision. As we know from the chapters on the foremost persons in the Anguttara Nikaya, Venerable Upali Thera was declared by the Buddha as the foremost among upholders of the discipline, so he was skilled to be able to undertake this investigation. So Venerable Upali Thera wisely invited a group of respectable people from Savatthi, and this included Visakha, and let them investigate into the case, or help him to investigate into the case, to find out whether the pregnancy took place before or after becoming a bhikkhuni. With sufficient evidence, the ladies were able to report to Venerable Upali Thera that she had conceived while still a layperson prior to ordaining. And Venerable Upali Thera then gave unequivocal ruling that since the pregnancy took place before entering the order of the bhikkhunis, she had not had any misconduct, and so she was proclaimed to be innocent and stood as a clean bhikkhuni. The Buddha praised the Venerable Upali Thera for his competent judgment in the controversy. Now, if we reflect on this a moment, it's good to see that it was a fortunate thing for Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera to have been born to this young bhikkhuni, because while he was in the womb, his mother would have been keeping higher precepts, listening and practicing to the Dhamma, so that would have provided a relatively conducive situation for him to come into the world. And it's said that when he was born, he came out looking like a golden statuette. And we also learned that King Pasenadi of Kosala offered to take care of the child, understanding bringing up a child would have been an obstruction to the bhikkhuni's spiritual life. He brought him up in his palace like a princeling, and at the age of 7, he was dressed finely and sent to the Buddha's monastery for novice ordination. He was referred to by the Buddha as Kumara Kassapa, and this translates as boy Kassapa. And so this was in distinction to other novices by the name of Kassapa. And in another sense, we could also see that Kumara means prince. And since Kassapa was fostered by King Pasenadi of Kosala, Kumara Kassapa could also be taken to mean Prince Kassapa. There's also a Vinaya rule that is attributed to Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera, and it appears in the great chapter of the Vinaya. And it says, at that time, Venerable Kumarakasapa had been given the full ordination 20 years after he appeared in the womb. He thought, the Buddha has laid down a rule that a person less than 20 years old shouldn't be given the full ordination. I was ordained 20 years after appearing in the womb. I wonder, have I been ordained or not? And they told the Buddha. And so the Buddha made this ruling. When the mind first appears in the mother's womb, when the consciousness first manifests, that's a person's birth. I allow you to give full ordination to someone who is 20 years old since appearing in the womb. And so this is how the allowance to be fully ordained when one is 20 years old since appearing in the womb was declared by the Buddha. So if this had not been declared, then a person would actually wait until they turn 21, given that it would have been once they'd actually been born, so to speak. So now we come to the legend of Kumarakasapa Thera, and we find out further information about Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera's past lives. And these are in his own words. So let's start reading this out. 100,000 eons hence, the leader arose in the world, the hero, friend of every world, whose name is Padmutra. Being a Brahmin at that time, distinguished, a Vedic master, wandering during siesta, I saw the leader of the world explaining the Four Noble Truths, awakening the world, including the devas, praising the multitude, the top of those with varied discourse. At that time, with a gladdened mind, inviting him, the Tathagata, decorating a pavilion with bolts of cloth diversely dyed, lit up by various gemstones, I fed him with the monks in it. Having fed them all for a week, diverse, foremost, and tasty food, worshipping him and followers with flowers of various hues bowed down in front of his feet, I aspired to attain that place. Then the excellent sage, soul hoard of the taste of compassion, said, look at that excellent Brahmin, with face and eyes like lotuses, possessing much joy and delight, his body hair growing upward, his large eyes extremely mirthful, eager for my dispensation, fallen down in front of my feet. Happily turned toward one purpose. He is wishing for that foremost place of speakers with variegated speech. So we can rejoice Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera's great offering to Padmutra Buddha and the Sangha. And we can also acknowledge how this offering helped towards his aspiration to be foremost of Dhamma speakers with variegated speech. And we'll explore this a little bit further along. And then Padmutra Buddha made the following declaration. In 100,000 eons arising in Okaka's clan, the one whose name is Gautama will be the teacher in the world, worthy heir to that one's Dhamma, Dhamma's legitimate offspring named Kumarakasapa. He will be the teacher's disciple. Through the power of that cloth with varied hues and gems as well, he will attain the foremost place of speakers with variegated speech. Due to that karma done very well, with intention and firm resolve, having abandoned my human body, I went to Tavatinsa then. Roaming this or that life like an actor upon a stage, the son of a deer named Saka, I entered the womb of a doe. And then while I was in the womb, my mother's turn to die stood nigh. Turned out by Saka, my mother went to Nigrodha for refuge. By that dear king Nigrodha, she was released from her pending death. Sacrificing his life instead, Nigrodha then advised me thus, only Nigrodha should be served. Don't keep company with Saka. Better death in Nigrodha's care than life in the care of Saka. Instructed by that advice of the dear king, my mother and I, because of his advice, attained to the delightful Tusita heaven, like we had gone abroad with our house. So we see that after his birth during Padmutra Buddha, he then went to Tavatinsa realm, and then he roamed about from different lives. And then he went to this life that he mentions was animal realm, into the womb of a doe. So he's born as a deer. And we're going to look at that particular birth story a little bit later along, because it's very interesting, this advice that Nigrodha had given him about not going under the care of Saka, and a little bit more on that later. And so after that birth, he went to the Tusita heaven. And then it says, again, when Hirakasapa's dispensation had reached its goal, ascending to a mountaintop, engaged in the victor's teachings. So it was said at the time of Kasapa Buddha, he was with a group who had entered the order of the Sangha, and so he had entered with six others, and this included Pukkusathi, who's also in the Sutapithaka, Dharuchirya, Dabbamalaputta, and Savya. So these names should be familiar to us, at least a little, because we hear of them in the suttas. And they lived to practice, and so it says that they also lived a very rigorous ascetic life on the summit of a mountain. And so, in a way, when you practice so much, they would have tried to preserve the teachings of Kāsapa Buddha that were at that stage being forgotten. And then it goes on. Now in Rajagaha city, I was born in a wealthy family. So now he's talking about his final birth. My mother with me in her womb had gone forth into homelessness. Finding out that she was pregnant, they approached Devadatta then. He said, "Let all of you banish this Buddhist nun who is evil." Now she too being shown compassion by the Lord of Sages, Victor, my mother's living happily in a place for bhikkhuni. Finding that out, the Kosalan king supported me with the care given to a prince. And by name, I was Kasapa. Because there was great Kasapa, I was known as Boy Kasapa. Having heard the Buddha expound that the body is like an anthill, because of that, my mind was liberated without grasping in every respect. After taming King Pyasi, I then attained that foremost place. My defilements are now burnt up. All new existence is destroyed. Like elephants with broken chains, I am dwelling free from the taints. Being in best Buddha's presence was a very good thing for me. The three knowledges are attained. I have done what the Buddha taught. The four analytical modes and these eight liberations, six special knowledges mastered. I have done what the Buddha taught. Thus indeed, Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera spoke these verses. There's something extremely wonderful hearing it in the words of these noble disciples. And for me, what resonates is when I hear these words, I've done what the Buddha taught. To me, that all also reflects to us that they are suvicha, they're easy to instruct, they do what the Buddha has taught, they have the conviction towards the Dhamma, and they are with the ones that are practicing well. And so this is hugely inspiring to know that if you follow what the Buddha has taught, and you do your best to try and understand the meaning of the Dhamma, then one can also be liberated, just like any of these noble disciples who are monastic or lay people. And so it's a really, really wonderful thing. And so to hear even his own birth story, his final birth in his own words, and these other parts, which we'll come to in a little bit further along. So we keep making reference to this Vamaka Sutta because this is the main one for Venerable Kumara Kassapa. So the background to the Vamaka Sutta, this simile of the anthill, is that when the Buddha was residing at Jethavana Monastery in Savatthi, Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera was dwelling in the forest, and it was called Andavana Forest. And there's a bit of a history to that forest. And it wasn't very far from Jethavana Monastery. Now, at that time, a Brahma or a deity from the pure abodes who happened to be a non-returner, having seen Venerable Kumara Kassapa striving and practicing in the forest, decided to visit and help him. Now, in their previous birth, it's said that at the time of Kassapa Buddha's dispensation, this particular Brahma who came to help him, he was part of that group of five or six monks who'd been practicing on the mountaintop. And so, having been re reborn to the pure abodes and clearly being a non-returner, he would have been around non-returners and arahants in the pure abodes. And it doesn't actually say which pure abode it was. And so, he would have heard different kinds of Dhamma from those beings, and those beings would have heard different Buddhas as well. So, we can infer that this particular Brahma probably knew what would be most helpful to Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera. And so he had thought of this Dhamma riddle or Dhamma puzzle to be contemplated. So in the middle of the night, he appeared in all his splendor before Venerable Kumara Kassapa in the forest. And Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera asked the Brahma, "Who has appeared here before me?" And the response was, "Venerable sir, I am a friend of yours who previously, during the time of Kassapa Buddha, practice meditation in pursuit of liberation, and I've been reborn in the pure abodes, having attained the fruit of non-return." And so in Pali, that means that is Anagami Pala. And so then Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera says to the Brahma, "What is your purpose of coming to me?" And then the Brahma then made his purpose plain and he recited these words. So let's read them out. We won't go into the meaning, but we'll just read them out because it's quite interesting. Bhikkhu, bhikkhu, this anthill fumes by night and flames by day. Thus spoke the Brahmin. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a bar. A bar, O venerable sir. Thus spoke the Brahmin. Throw out the bar. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a toad. A toad, O venerable sir. Thus spoke the Brahmin. Throw out the toad. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a fork. A fork, O venerable sir. Thus spoke the Brahmin. Throw out the fork. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a sieve. A sieve, O venerable sir. Thus spoke the Brahmin. Throw out the sieve. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a tortoise. A tortoise, O venerable sir. Thus spoke the Brahmin. Throw out the tortoise. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a butcher's knife and block. A butcher's knife and block, venerable sir. Thus spoke the Brahmin. Throw out the butcher's knife and block. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a piece of meat. A piece of meat, O venerable sir. Thus spoke the Brahmin. Throw out the piece of meat. Delve with the knife, thou wise one. Delving with the knife, the wise one saw a naga serpent. A naga serpent, O venerable sir. Thus spoke the Brahmin. Leave the naga serpent. Do not harm the naga serpent. Honor the naga serpent. And then the Brahma further said, Bhikkhu, you should go to the Blessed One and ask him about this riddle. As the Blessed One tells you, so you should remember it. Bhikkhu, other than the Tathagata or a disciple of the Tathagata or one who has learned it from them, I see no one in this world with its gods, its Maras, and its Brahmas, in this generation with its recluses and Brahmins, its princes, and its people, whose explanation of this riddle might satisfy the mind. That is what was said by the deity, who thereupon vanished at once. So we won't go into the Buddha's explanation here. We'll save that for our separate session. But it's very important to remember that after receiving the explanation and instructions from the Buddha, this is what Venerable Kumarakasvatthara practiced. He went back to the Andavana forest and he applied himself, made lots of effort to contemplate the riddle and to penetrate the Dhamma. And not long afterward, it said he realized the fruit of arahantship. So that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So that's some inspiration for us when we actually come to the Vamaka. Now, we know from the Anguttara Nikaya, and we've mentioned it during this session, that Venerable Kumarakasapa was declared by the Buddha as foremost of his bhikkhu disciples amongst those with variegated speech. So in Pali, this is Cittakatikānam. And Cittakatikānam is translated here as variegated speech. And one might wonder, what does that mean? And it can also be translated as brilliant speech, manifold speech, versatile speech, eloquent speech, even beautiful speech, or well spoken. And we can assume that the Buddha made this reference in terms of speaking Dhamma. And we know in his previous life, at the time of Patamuttara Buddha, he had made the aspiration to be foremost in this ability. And luckily, we have at least one discourse that can be used as an example of why Venerable Kumarakasvatthara was given this honor and how skilled he was with applying different methods while speaking on the Dhamma. Now, there may be other discourses where Venerable Kumarakasapa had given a teaching or had dialogues in Dhamma, but if so, we no longer have them. They've likely been destroyed or lost or no longer remembered, which is a misfortune for us if that is the case. So the one discourse we do have, and it's in the longer discourses, and this is called the Payasi Sutta, so Digha Nikaya, discourse number 23, and it is a very long discourse. And it's one of the most fascinating dialogues I've come across in the Sutta Pitaka. It also demonstrates a lot of the good qualities in his personality or the good qualities in his practice, because when you read through the sutta, you see that he doesn't shake and he doesn't get angry and he doesn't get flapped by this persistent, insidious wrong view that Prince Payasi keeps asserting and won't budge from. And you can imagine during the time of the Buddha, as in now, there are so many wrong views that keep coming up and people keep persevering with them. And so I take this when you actually go through the Payasi Sutta as a bit of a really wonderful challenge of how to develop such a quality, such as like Venerable Kumarakasapa, that is so compassionate, so kind, but yet very firm in the Dhamma and won't budge in the right view and so willing to help to the extent that he did. It's very inspiring because if you share Dhamma, you know that there comes a point where you kind of want to just give up. And maybe there are instances where you have to give up so it doesn't become an argument, but there are also opportunities where it's not like that. And there's a real chance or wholesomeness to being able to help someone who is troubled by wrong view. So I'll just read out the opening few paragraphs so we can establish what the discourse is about. We won't go through the whole lot because it's a very long sutta. So it goes, thus have I heard once the Venerable Kumarakasapa was touring around Kosala with a large company of about 500 monks, and he came to stay at a town called Setavia. He stayed in the north of Setavia in the Simsapa forest, and at that time Prince Payasi was living at Setavia, a populous place full of grass, timber, water, and corn, which had been given to him by King Pasenadi of Kosala as a royal gift and with royal powers. And Prince Payasi developed the following evil opinion or wrong view. There is no other world. There are no spontaneously born beings. There is no fruit or result of good or evil deeds. Meanwhile, the Brahmins and householders of Setavia heard the news. The ascetic Kumarakasapa, a disciple of the ascetic Gautama, is touring around Kosala with a large company of about 500 monks. He has arrived at Setavia and is staying to the north of Setavia in the Samsapa forest. And concerning the Reverend Kasapa, a good report has been spread about. He is learned, experienced, wise, well informed, a fine speaker, able to give good replies, venerable, an arahant. And it's good to see such arahants. And so the Brahmins and householders of Setavia, leaving Setavia by the north gate in large numbers, made for the Simsapa forest. And just then, Prince Payasi had gone up to the veranda for his midday rest. Seeing all the Brahmins and householders making for the Simsapa forest, he asked his steward why, and the steward gave the same kind of account of why all the villagers were leaving. And so Prince Payasi then says, well, then, steward, you go to the Brahmins and householders of Setavia and say, gentlemen, Prince Payasi says this, please wait, the prince will come to see the ascetic Kumarakasapa. Already, this ascetic Kumarakasapa has been teaching these foolish and inexperienced Brahmins and householders of Setavia that there is another world, that there are spontaneously born beings, and that there is fruit and result of good and bad deeds, or good and evil deeds, but no such things exist. Very good, sir, said the steward and delivered the message. Then Prince Payasi accompanied the Brahmins and householders of Setavia and went to Simsapa forest where the Venerable Kumarakasapa was. And then what ensues after all the greetings and pleasantries have been exchanged is a very lively dialogue between Prince Payasi and Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera. Now, because we're not going through it, I thought I would summarize some of the statements and the arguments presented by Prince Payasi in support of his own wrong view, and also Venerable Kumarakasapa's responses to each one. And what you'll see is he uses a mixture of different approaches to address each of the arguments or responses from Prince Payasi. So the first one is he has this statement of wrong view. And that's what we read out just before. And so Venerable Kumarakasapa questions him about the sun and the moon. And that will make more sense when you actually read it. But it's just interesting that he counters it with a question. And so Prince Payasi doesn't back down. And he said he's actually done an experiment. And he has come to the conclusion that beings reborn in hell realms do not return. And so Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera asks another question about a thief who is about to be executed. And then it goes back to Prince Payasi, who again does not back down. And he says, beings reborn in heavenly realms based on his experiment, let me go back to that slide, they do not return. And so then what Venerable Kumarakasapa does is he swaps to a parable. And he gives this parable about a man pulled out of a cesspit and then he's cleaned. And even after giving that parable, Prince Payasi does not back down. And then he says, well, beings reborn in Tavatinsadevaram do not return, because he did another experiment. And then he reverts to a question. So Venerable Kumara Kassapa questions him about the relativity of time in the human realm versus Tavatinsa realm. And so there's a back and forth. And then Prince Payasi says he doesn't believe in the Tavatinsadeva realm after talking about it. And then doesn't believe, as a natural consequence of that, about the long lifespan in the Tavatinsa realm. And so at that point, he switches it up this time, and Venerable Kumara Kassapa offers up this parable of, or sorry, a simile of being blind from birth. And so after giving that simile, Prince Payasi comes back with this statement about good and moral ascetics and Brahmins, and that they don't end up killing themselves despite understanding about dukkha. And so he reverts back to giving this parable, and this time it's about a Brahmin with two wives. And it's interesting because this is almost like your halfway point. And what happens is Prince Payasi still will not budge, and then it gets extremely gruesome. So he has done this experiment on a thief to see whether the life force emerges after killing a thief who's been placed alive in a covered container or jar and heated. So it's gruesome stuff. And Venerable Kumara Kassapa does not berate him. Instead, he asks him a question about people watching over you as you dream while taking a midday nap. And having asked that question and received an answer, Prince Payasi then still does not agree with Venerable Kumara Kassapa, and then he talks about another experiment he's done about a thief who is alive versus a thief who is dead, and trying to weigh a person's life force. And so Venerable Kumara Kassapa then comes back with this parable of a hot iron ball. And you can see that Venerable Kumara Kassapa by this point is still persisting. It's quite unbelievable. And so Prince Payasi then goes on about another experiment that he does, which is about torturing a half-dead thief. So he's half-dead and then saying that the life force does not emerge. And so at that point, Venerable Kumara Kassapa gives another parable, which is this parable of a trumpeter and the trumpet. And some of these parables are wonderful ways of looking at some of these things. Like if one were to encounter wrong view, we could use some of these arguments as well, especially if we do understand them and where Venerable Kumara Kassapa is coming from. So anyway, he gives this parable about the trumpeter and the trumpet, and Prince Payasi is not moved by that. He comes back with another experiment that he's done, which has been that he has not seen the life force emerge after skinning a thief. And it's just horrible. And so Venerable Kumara Kassapa then gives him this parable about the matted hair fire-worshipping ascetic. And that one was a very nifty one. You can see how quick-witted or skilled, quite wise, Venerable Kumara Kassapa is. It's just amazing. And then Prince Payasi does not back down still. And it's at this point he stops talking about his experiments. And the next four kind of responses that he gives are around fear of reputational loss. So this means that he doesn't want to be shamed by his peers or the kings or people of that time if he were to change his wrong view to another view. He doesn't want to be seen as grasping at wrong views if he were to change. And so the next four things, each time Prince Payasi repeats this fear of reputational loss, Venerable Kumara Kassapa keeps giving very, very impressive parables. So he starts off with the parable of the two caravan leaders, and that's quite a wonderful parable. And then after that, when he still doesn't budge, he gives this parable of the swineherd carrying a heap of dung. And it's quite visual. I quite like that one. And then when he comes back and repeats the same thing that he doesn't want to do to change his view, then he gives this parable of the two gamblers. And then the final one that he gives after getting the same response from Prince Payasi is this parable of the hemp bearer. And I thought that was one of the most powerful parables that Venerable Kumara Kassapa would have given, because if you're still holding on to the wrong view, this one would make you think twice. I mean, all of them have their place in terms of the teaching, but I was particularly like at the end of it, after so long, he's given at the end 15 or 16 different responses. And so at this point, what happens is Prince Payasi reveals that after this parable of the two caravan leaders, he was actually convinced, but he was so impressed with Venerable Kumarakasapa, he wanted to hear his responses. And so that's why we get the extra three. He wasn't actually angry, or he wasn't actually still holding on to the wrong view. He just was really impressed with Venerable Kumarakasapa. And when you read the sutta, you actually do become very impressive. It gives you that really strong idea. If we didn't understand what this variegated speech was, we certainly do after reading this particular sutta. And so after that, the question that Prince Payasi asks is, how do I make a great sacrifice towards the teaching? And so this is where a Venerable Kumarakasapa gives this simile about the two fields. And it's quite remarkable at how, through this particular dialogue between the two of them, how Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera was able to help Prince Payasi to actually overcome the wrong view. And so, as you can see, Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera used questions, similes, parables, and also probably his manner to diffuse Prince Payasi's argument and to keep the dialogue going. And when you go through the discourse, you actually do see that he remains quite unflappable. There's no signs of anger or frustration, but he also is not too kind in the sense that he doesn't call him foolish, because there is a point where it's foolishness to just hold on to the wrong view just because of your reputation. And it's just wonderful to actually read through. So, towards the end of the discourse, Prince Payasi actually does reveal that he extended the dialogue despite having been convinced. And he clearly enjoyed the lengthy debate. And so he actually says and praises Venerable Kumarakasapa by saying at the end of the sutta, "Excellent Reverend Akasapa, excellent. It is as if someone were to set up what had been knocked down, or to point out the way to the one who had got lost, or to bring an oil lamp into a dark place so that those with eyes could see what was there. Just so has the Reverend Kasapa expounded the Dhamma in various ways. And I, Reverend Kasapa, go for refuge to the Blessed One, to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha. May the Reverend Kasapa accept me from this day forth as a lay follower as long as life shall last." Now, the only other thing at the end of that sutta was around this person called Uttara, who was the distributor of things to the poor or to other people. So he actually went on, Prince Payasi, to actually action in terms of making a great sacrifice. But the interesting thing was that Uttara recognized that Prince Payasi was giving substandard things. So he was given broken rice instead of the really good stuff. He was giving probably rag robes instead of better quality clothing when he was giving out. And so Uttara had this reflection in the Payasi Sutta saying, "We are together in this life doing good deeds, but the fruit of that in the afterlife will be different." And it's quite interesting because we'll come back to what happened to Uttara after we go through the next couple of references. So actually, we come to it now. It's interesting, this one, because this flows on from the Payasi Sutta that we just went through. And so this reference comes from the Vimanavatthu, so stories of the heavenly mansions. And Venerable Kumarakasapa encounters a deva from the Tavatinsa realm. And it gives us a glimpse into the psychic abilities that Venerable Kumarakasapa had. And we get some form of confirmation that Uttara, who I just mentioned, was reborn in the Tavatinsa realm. And we do find out in another discourse that Prince Payasi was reborn in one of the deva realms, but it wasn't the Tavatinsa realm. So it was a lesser one. And so Kumarakasapa Bante says this: "Dear Deva, Saka, king of the Devas, has the beautiful Sudama assembly hall where all the Devas gather harmoniously. Shining brilliantly in the sky, your mansion is as beautiful as that assembly hall. You attain psychic potency of the Devas and great majesty. What kind of meritorious action did you perform when you were in the human world so that your brilliant majesty and beauty illuminates in all directions?" that David delighted at being questioned at Arahant Kumarakasapa, explained what meritorious action resulted in such great fruit. And so the Deva says, Bhante, when I was born a human being among men, I was a young man under King Pyasi. With the wealth I received, I shared with those who were virtuous, who were dear to me. With a gladdened mind, I offered food and drink respectfully as an abundant giving. Great Bhante, that is the meritorious action that has resulted in this beauty that illuminates in all directions. And so this is the fruit of making offering, giving respect, and all those sorts of things. So a lovely little encounter. So then we have the story of the mother of Kumarakasapa. So the young bhikkhuni is the mother. And so we don't get her name in the suttas, but there is this saying in the Dhammapada, and it's verse number 160, and it was uttered by the Buddha with reference to Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera's mother. And the Dhammapada commentary recounts the same story of how this young mother asked permission from her husband and all that sort of thing. So we've spoken about all that before and the investigation and everything. So we know that Venerable Kumarakasapa was born. He was under the protection and care of King Pasenadi until he was 7, and then he went for novice ordination. And then we know that he eventually was given this riddle, and then he went and practiced it after receiving teachings from the Buddha. And then he attained arahantship after making effort towards the teaching. And then what we learn from the commentary is that he stayed in the forest for another 12 years. So Venerable Kumarakasapa Thera's mother had not seen him for those 12 years, and she really longed to see her son very, very much. And one day when she saw him after he came out of the forest, despite being a bhikkhuni, she ran after her son. So she ran after Venerable Kumarakasapa, and she was weeping and calling out his name. So seeing his mother, Venerable Kumarakasapa, and seeing her in that state, he thought to himself that if he were to be kind and speak pleasantly to her, she would still remain very attached to him, and that would be an obstruction to her attaining Nibbana. And so with this at the forefront of his mind, he was deliberately stern. So he spoke harshly to her, but behind it, it was compassion was why he was doing it. His intention was not to harm her. And so he says to her in a harsh kind of tone, how is it that you, a member of the order, could not even cut off this affection for a son? And so his mother naturally thought that her son was being quite cruel because of his harsh speech. And she asked him what he meant. And Venerable Kumarakasapa then repeated exactly the same thing. How is it that you, a member of the order, could not even cut off this affection for a son? And so, hearing the answer again, his mother reflected. So, this bhikkhuni reflected, for 12 years I have shed tears for this son of mine, yet he has spoken harshly to me. What is the use of my affection for him? And then she recognized that it was actually quite futile to be so attached to her son. And then and there, she decided to cut off that attachment. So she basically recognized it's due to tanha that you suffer in that way. And so if she cuts off this craving, this tanha towards her son, who's an enlightened monk, then it would be a good thing. So having cut off the attachment entirely, the mother, that very same day, she attained arahantship. So we don't suffer just for suffering's sake. There has to be some tanha there, some craving. That's the origin of suffering. So it's a very good lesson, even for us to reflect in order to understand dukkha better. So one day at the congregation of bhikkhus, some bhikkhus said to the Buddha, Venerable Sir, if the mother of Kumarakasapa had listened to Devadatta, she as well as her son would not have become arahants. Surely Devadatta had tried to do them a great wrong. But you, Venerable Sir, are a refuge to them. And to them, the Buddha then said, Bhikkhus, in trying to reach the Deva world or in trying to attain arahantship, you cannot depend on others. You must work hard on your own. And then the Buddha spoke the Dhammapada verse, which is, Atta hi atano nato, truly the self is the protector of oneself. Ko hi nato parosiya. What other protector could there be? Atanahi sudantena, when oneself is well tamed, natang labhati dulabhang, one attains protection that is difficult to gain. And interestingly, in the Nigrodhamika Jataka, so that this is the same Jataka we referred to before, Jataka number 12, the Buddha was telling the monks that the Tathagata has given refuge to these two, so Venerable Kumarakassapa and his mother before, and he was the same to them in the past also. And then in the Jataka story, he actually goes through that past birth. He tells the story about the doe and her offspring, and at that time, there was a golden-hued deer king called Nigrodha, who was attended by 500 deer, so he had a 500 deer herd. And there was another golden-hued deer at the time, and the name was Saka. And he also had a deer herd of 500. So both deer herds were being hunted by King Brahmadatta at the time, who would hunt as the pastime, and then they would eat what they had slaughtered. And the two golden deers were exempt. They were granted immunity by the hunter king, but the rest of the herd lived in fear. Now, when Nigrodha, the deer king, recognized the great loss in numbers to both their herds, as well as not being able to actually escape death, he thought rather than suffer more and to be injured and wounded and to have such great fear, he would make an agreement. And so he made an agreement with Saka deer that they would alternate between the herds as sacrifice, like willing sacrifice to be slaughtered that day. And this would overcome being injured and suffer from being wounded and being so fearful. So every day a deer would go alternatively from each herd and lie down with their neck ready to be on the chopping block for the cook to come and slaughter them. And so one day it was the turn of a pregnant doe of Saka herd. She went to Saka deer and asked to be passed over and argued that after giving birth, there would be two turns rather than just one. But Saka deer didn't have compassion and rejected the request and told her to bear the consequences. So the pregnant doe went to Nigrodha, the deer king, and made a similar request. And Nigrodha actually granted her request. And when it came time for her turn, he himself went to the place of execution and he laid his head down on the block, even despite having immunity. So, seeing the deer king, the golden-hued deer, lying with the head on the block, the cook ran to the king, for King Brahmadatta, and told him that one of the immunity given deers was on the chopping block. And so the king came and asked Nigrodha, the deer king, why he was there, given that he had been granted immunity. So Nigrodha explained that about the pregnant doe and how he could not pass the misfortune upon another deer. And so instead, he laid his own life down for her and the unborn. And so King Brahmadatta was overcome by the kindness and compassion. And so he spared both the life of Nigrodha as well as the doe and the child or the baby deer who hadn't been born yet. And so Nigrodha then asked about the rest of the deer herd. You know, what about having compassion for the rest of the deer herd? And the king granted immunity. And so then they went on to discuss other four-footed creatures, birds, fishes, until immunity was granted for the lives of all creatures. And so this is how it came to be that Nigrodha negotiated and came to establish King Brahmadatta in the five precepts, beginning with not killing living beings. And so the story goes on more from that, but we won't go into it. So in this Jataka, Saka deer was the previous birth of Devadatta, and those in his deer herd were his followers in the final lifetime. And the doe was a previous birth of the young bhikkhuni, so the Venerable Kumarakassapa's mother. And the offspring, of course, was the previous birth of Venerable Kumarakassapa Thera. And Venerable Ananda Thera was King Brahmadatta in that previous birth. And Nigrodha, the deer king, was one of the Buddha's previous births. So this aligns with Venerable Kumarakassapa's words in his legend about the wise advice offered by Nigrodha. So I'm going to link that in here because Nigrodha had said, take refuge in Nigrodha rather than Saka, and how it is better to die in Nigrodha's care than life in the care of Saka. So the same rings true for the final birth of Venerable Kumarakassapa Thera and his mother. If his mother had stayed with Devadatta, which she couldn't anyway, she was expelled, but that would have been a great misfortune for both of them. And so they had come to the Buddha, which was in this lifetime, it was the Buddha. And So they were saved, they were able to attain Nibbana. So knowing that in the Buddhist dispensation they were able to attain Nibbana, that's what it means by always staying in Nigrodha's care. So from that past birth, seeking out one such as Nigrodha, who eventually in this birth becomes the Buddha. So that's what I mean. So it comes full circle. So when we take that advice to heart, and I hope I've explained that properly, but if you take that advice to heart, it's to be wary of teachers that guide us away from the Buddha's teachings, that guide us away from safety, because Nibbana is actually safety. It's the real happiness. If we stay in the Buddha's instructions, that we steer clear of wrong view and we practice right view, which is the beginning of the Noble Eightfold Path, then the outcome will be right liberation, right knowledge, right liberation, Nibbana. If we don't, if we go with the wrong view and the wrong teachers, then we remain with not safe, still in samsara. And so that's what we can take away from it. So it's a wonderful thing what Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera was able to do for his mother, for this bhikkhuni who clearly had not attained Nibbana yet. But after seeing her attachment to her son, being shown it, then she was able to attain Nibbana. So the final thing to complete our examination of Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera is to look at the verses he recited or uttered in this verses of senior monks. So this is Kumara Kassapa Thera Gatha. And what we see in this is his conviction towards the Triple Gem, and also his encouragement that if you really look at the Dhamma yourself, you can actually directly know it for yourself and realize Nibbana. So he says, "O the Buddhas, O the Dhammas, O the attainments of the teacher, here a disciple may realize such Dhamma for themselves. Through countless eons, he has said, existing bodies are obtained. This is the last, the very final body in the transmigration through birth and death. Now there is no more rebirth." Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So we can use what we've learned about Venerable Kumara Kassapa Thera's life, his good qualities, as inspiration for our practice, so we can realize the Dhamma for ourselves just like him. And you can see it's extremely uplifting to hear his words that that was his last birth, his very final body, and no more samsara, no more births and deaths, no more rebirth. So we've now come to the end of our session. We can share the merits of our wholesome time together with all sentient beings. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free from suffering. Blessings of the Triple Gem to all of you. Wishing you all well. Theravan Saranai.